Newstime 8:11, good morning. Well, the dust has settled after the 2019 general session of the Utah legislature ended last week. KPCW has been following a number of bills that are of particular interest to Summit and Wasatch County residents. On the phone to recap, I have KPCW reporter Emily Means. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the legislature, as we know, passed a record 573 bills this year. House Bill 320, that was the ban on plastic bag bans, wasn't one of them. So what happened to that?
So that passed in the House Natural Resources Committee in the last week of February. Actually, there was a false start in its first hearing. There wasn't enough time to hear it, so it got a second hearing in that committee and then passed out of that committee. But, you know, it kind of got stuck in the full House. So the bill's sponsor, Representative Mike McKell, moved to uncircle the bill, which means open it up to discussion by the House floor at least twice. And he was actually met with boos and groans from the House of Representatives. And we actually have some great audio of that on our website, kpcw.org. But it seems like this bill kind of became, you know, the butt end of a joke. And House Speaker Brad Wilson thought it was kind of funny when the floor voted not to uncircle the bill. But this was the second year that the bill has been run, and it also failed in the final days of the session last year. So I don't know if it will be run again, but Mike McKell sponsored that bill as well. So, you know, maybe three times the charm, I'm not sure, but Representatives Tim Quinn and Logan Wild actively opposed the bill and apparently encouraged their colleagues to vote against it too, which is probably why no one voted to debate it any further. So it joins the list of bills that did not pass this legislative session.
And the other bill that didn't make it out of session was the big sales tax reform sponsored by Wasatch County Representative Tim Quinn. We'll be talking to Tim, we hopeful, hopefully later this week or early next week. But what can you tell us about this?
Sure. And I think this one probably surprised a lot of people. I know I was surprised. House leadership, Senate leadership, and the governor, they all really pushed for this bill to pass this session. But, you know, Tim Quinn says he's been working on it for 6 months. This is House Bill 441, by the way. But it was made public about halfway through the session. And as soon as it was, you know, people showed up to represent their industries and interests. You know, every business that had a new tax placed on its services, different industries that had lost their tax exemptions. And also the teachers union was not interested in having this bill pass as is, because it actually lowered the income tax rate, and that goes directly into the education fund. So after it passed out of its first committee hearing, the bill was circled twice in the House. And after the second time, when Tim Quinn moved to circle it, you know, like 45 minutes later, Governor Gary Herbert announced that the tax bill wouldn't go any further in this session and that they would be revisiting it. So until that time, a task force will be studying the state's options for putting money into the general fund. And Herbert says that they're open to pretty much anything. You know, this bill wasn't very popular, so it seems like this task force will probably, you know, make some changes to what the state plans to do in terms of putting more money into the general fund. So Herbert actually suggested, or they've kind of floated the idea that anything could happen, including restoring the full tax on food from 1.75% to 4.7%. Or possibly increasing property taxes. So I thought the food tax mention was interesting, because Tim Quinn actually tried to remove all sales tax from food last year. So if he has any muscle to flex on the bill, I'm not so sure that the food tax increase would happen. But another interesting thing pertaining to tax reform, in the final days of the session, Senator Dan McKay actually proposed an amendment to the state constitution to redistribute a portion of the income tax to fund social services. So as it stands, income tax can only go towards education, towards the education fund. But, you know, he kind of wanted to redirect some of that money into the general fund for social services. So that could be an option, too, though I imagine it's much more difficult to amend the state constitution. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Herbert says he's hoping to call legislators into a special session this summer. So yeah, that'll maybe be sometime around August.
That'll be interesting to watch because, I mean, as we hear over and over, leadership is about doing the right thing, not doing what's popular. So we'll see if...
They kind of caved on this one, though. to be fair, Herbert and House Speaker Brad Wilson and Senate President Stuart Adams said that it was not caving, and it was more, you know, listening to the concerns of the public. So hopefully this process kind of gives a little more time for people to understand what could go into this tax bill. And actually, I read that part of the task force is to go out into the public and have hearings and work sessions with them. And so, you know, hopefully it's an improved process from, releasing this huge bill halfway through the session.
Yeah, Park City, Summit County government's pretty pleased with themselves. Lots of slaps on the backs and high fives with House Bill 411, the Community Renewable Energy Act. We're going to talk to Luke Carton from Park City Municipal about this in the future here. Do we know what this is going to cost us, though?
Not quite yet. Tyler Polson, who's Salt Lake City's Luke Carton, basically, is their sustainability program manager. In his testimony to the committee, he estimated about a 7% increase to electricity rates, but Rocky Mountain Power, the representative from Rocky Mountain Power, could not confirm that number. So we're not so sure, it seems like. And it also seems that it really depends on how many people choose to participate in this program because, like we've talked about, there is an opt-out feature. So they really need to build a framework around some idea of how many people are going to be participating, and the rates will kind of depend on that. But on top of that, it's all about the process, right? So this bill really establishes a process for implementing a program like this in a community. And as part of that, you know, Rocky Mountain Power will talk with the community, we'll work out an arrangement, and then they have to have their rates approved by the State Public Service Commission. And then even after that, once the Public Service Commission has weighed in, they will bring the rates to the community, and, you know, who knows how much input ratepayers will have there, but at least there should be some awareness of the rates that people would be paying if they participated in this. So we'll ask Luke if he has any more details, but, I don't know how far out it is for this program to be implemented. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a long-term thing.
Yeah, and because it's an opt-out program or the way that it was passed, it's interesting to find out whether or not it's going to snare a bunch of residents who don't know about it and end up paying higher electric fees because they didn't know to opt out.
And that was definitely the big concern for committee members, but also, you know, in the full House. And I think Park City and Salt Lake City and Rocky Mountain Power, they really wanted to stress that this would be a transparent process and, you know, a lot of communication between the community. And for people who want to opt out, they get 3 billing cycles to do so. So I can't remember what the initial opt-out period was, but in this final bill, you get 3 billing cycles to opt out before paying a fee. And someone had mentioned, I think it was Tyler Polson or maybe the Rocky Mountain Power representative in the committee hearing, that you know, down the line, the more time you spend in the program, that's when the fee to opt out would be more substantial. So if you happen to decide in the fourth month that you're in the program to opt out, you shouldn't expect to pay a large fee, but again, I don't really know the numbers, and I don't think they do either.
Okay, let's get through these others real quickly here. Of course, there will be beer in grocery stores at a little bit of higher alcohol content.
A little bit, 4% as opposed to the 4.8% alcohol by weight that SB 132 originally proposed. But that came out of a compromise. Initially, you know, Senator Stevenson had proposed the 4.8%, but that bill got completely scrapped in favor of one that would create a task force to create or to study the effects of having the 4.8% beer in grocery stores. And so the compromise was 4% plus a task force, basically. So, you know, legislators seemed concerned about the effects of higher point beer on public health and safety. And they were also curious as to why we needed this bill and if there was a problem with availability, you know, in rural Utah or something. Can people get beer in grocery stores? So that's something the task force will study, and it's staffed by the DABC. So, you know, I don't think it's what Senator Stevenson was hoping for. He's really the legislature's point guy on alcohol legislation, and that's not what he even considered this. He considered it a commerce bill. So, you know, maybe we'll end up with 4.8% somewhere down the road, but for now, it's 4%. And that'll start November 1st. That's when consumers could start seeing that slightly higher percentage in their grocery stores.
Okay, we'll talk to the school district business administrators, but what happened with education funding?
It looks pretty good, actually. I saw a headline from the Deseret News. Senate President Stuart Adams says education came out on top in this legislative session. And, you know, maybe to some people's surprise, because lawmakers decided on the budget in the last days of the session. And so I think a lot of people were kind of on the edge of their seats. But we talked with Todd Haber at the beginning of the session to kind of find his expectations for education funding, and they did get the 4% increase in the weighted pupil unit. That's about $128 million more in per pupil spending across the state. And I think Todd had said that would be about $600,000 more for Park City School District. So I think, you know, out of all the issues that got funded this session, education really received a lot of the budget.
And I know some Wasatch County residents very concerned about what may have happened with the initiative process. They, of course, have been very successful getting two public referendum initiatives overturning Wasatch County Council decisions. We had heard early on that there might be some changes requiring more signatures in less time. Do we know what happened to this?
So the legislature passed three bills related to the ballot initiative process, and I can't remember which one exactly that one is. I think that might be HB 119. I'm not sure if that one made the cut, but what did make the cut is one that would set the effective date back for initiatives until after the general session. And there's a bit of a discrepancy here, actually, because for bills that would, or for initiatives that would lower tax rates, that would kick in, you know, with all the other bills after the general session passes. But for bills that increase the tax rates, those would take effect a year after, you know, the general session ends. So Brad Daw, the representative who sponsored that bill and also the one that we're referring to that I can't remember the number of, he says that, you know, for those initiatives that increase tax rates, we really need to take more time to study them, and the legislature should spend more time making adjustments that might be needed. So another thing that I actually thought was interesting, sorry, Leslie, I know we don't have much time, but they did pass some legislation that relates to the medical cannabis law that they passed after the initiative passed. And it's just some small tweaks, but basically it would decriminalize state employees who dispense the cannabis and, you know, prevent them from being labeled as drug dealers, essentially. So some tweaks to the initiative process and some tweaks to initiatives made during this session. And I think that is a major theme that we saw.
Okay, Emily, appreciate your coverage. She's, again, Emily Means from KPCW. You've been kind of following the Utah legislature for us this session. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
It's 8:27 now. Good morning. Well, Heber City is updating its master plan. The initiative's website, envisionheber.com, says the update will contemplate the future of the community and tackle the challenges and trends that will affect the city for the next 30-plus year. On the phone to talk about Envision Heber 2050, I have Heber City Mayor Colleen Potter. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's talk a little bit about how you and the council are prioritizing what challenges to address in the general plan.
Well, we have a steering committee, and since this plan is supposed to represent the wishes of the community, we're not really prioritizing the issues. We're kind of letting this come organically through the steering committee and through the issues that are brought up in our public meetings.
Okay, so that is, you've got the first of three public meetings happening on Wednesday. When and where is this going to be?
That will be at 6 o'clock at the Heber Valley Elementary School. It'll go from 6 to 8, and it's really a hands-on workshop where people will have an opportunity to look at maps and, you know, decide where density should go and shouldn't go and how we accommodate the population growth that's anticipated to come to Heber in the next, you know, 20, 30 years.
Okay. And then when are the next two?
And let me get on the website. I was afraid you'd ask me. Everything's on our Envision
Okay,
Heber
we can find
website,
that out.
But I don't have them off the top of my head.
Yeah. So what's the timeline on this?
Well, we're anticipating getting this whole thing done within a year. And then after that, we'll have to go and do a lot of code amendments. But, you know, the three meetings will be planned over the next 6 months. And then we'll kind of go from there, hoping to get it all tied up by the end of the year, first of next year.
Yeah, and how much has the council budgeted to do this?
Well, initially they budgeted $20,000, and we realized that was not adequate. So we've got, it's kind of a moving target. We've probably spent, we're up to about not quite $100,000 getting some consultants, making sure we have adequate information out for the public, you know, having people help us through the process who have done it in other cities.
So you have hired consultants to kind of walk you through the master planning process?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Let's see, the State of the City address is tomorrow. Will that mainly be focused on the master plan update or anything else in particular?
Well, I'm going to talk about some of the things that have happened throughout the year in Heber, just some of the numbers as far as our population and our growth and some of the new things that are happening. And then we're going to look at transportation specifically with our Heber Parkway / we've been calling it a bypass plans. We have a planning process that's just completed, and we're moving forward with an environmental study. We are also, you know, with this Envision Utah thing, we have some big power lines coming. So I'm just kind of giving updates on all these different big issues that are happening right now.
Okay. KPCW's David Boyle will be attending that, so we'll have a report on that following. My understanding is that the open comment period for the Heber Valley bypass or parkway, what do you prefer? Should we?
Parkway.
Parkway,
yeah.
Okay. That also closes on Wednesday. I mean, I guess why are we closing down comments?
Well, they closed them. They were going to close them at the first of the month just so that we can address them. We're not, the consultants and the city, we're not really addressing one at a time. We're waiting to see, oh, wait a minute, maybe this area is a bigger concern than we thought. And that the area right now that I'm seeing is the area on the south end. There's been a lot of people in the area that are concerned. So we're kind of collecting all the comments, and then we're going to start focusing on, you know, compiling those and addressing them one by one. Not
right.
One by one, but, you know, in the groups.
Sure. So we've heard complaints about the roots effect on neighboring homes, concerns about how it could impact the airport, as well as how the route is outdated. I mean, how do you plan to consider and implement changes then from the feedback you get?
Well, it's kind of a difficult process because, of course, we have to consult with UDOT because they have traffic engineers who do the studies and they look at the numbers. And of course, they want, and I do believe that they want to do what's best for our community. So we're looking at many different variables. And years ago, this plan was sort of put in place where it might work best. And now we're studying that plan. There's issues with wetlands on the north that we have to get the Army Corps of Engineers. There's issues with impact on the airport and the sewer farms and the public on the south. So there's a lot of moving pieces, and I'm not sure where it's all going to land.
Yeah.
So we just have to kind of look at it and try to do the best we can. This really is kind of our last shot at it. It's getting, you know, we have a lot of things that are trying to be done, and we're trying to get this certainty so that people can build around the anticipated route, even if it doesn't happen for 10 years.
Yeah, and so the route is set in stone. I mean, we're going to go forward with what was originally planned. I mean, we're talking 15 years ago, right?
Yeah, it was planned a long time ago. Well, originally there was a plan on the east side, and then development took over that space. So then they moved it to the west side 15, 20 years ago. So what we're trying to do now is say, is this feasible? First, is it necessary? So they did the numbers to say, okay, what are the numbers on your main street? What's going to happen if we don't do this? And then what happens with this route versus that route? So it's not set in stone, but we're moving forward to try and get an environmental study and continue to look at the different alternatives and see what would be optimal.
Yeah, and in terms of, I know Heber City just is a portion of this, Wasatch County also certainly part of this, but in terms of the money to purchase all of the right-of-way needed, or how close are we to that?
Well, for many years, we've been getting a $10 corridor preservation fund when people do their vehicle registration. And so some of the land has already been purchased. Some of it is anticipated to be donated when certain areas are developed. You know, there's an area right now that's applied for annexation, and they're totally willing to donate what needs to be developed if and when they annex the Heber. So it's kind of different depending on the area. And right now, what we're told is if 40 moves to this bypass and this becomes the state road, then all of that would be purchased as part of that process. Whatever hasn't been purchased would be purchased. One of the reasons we're trying to purchase it is to expedite the process and have the state look at it and say, oh, yeah, they've already got most of the land. Makes it easier and less expensive to get this road put in.
Now, some have even proposed having Main Street continue to be the main highway route and then make this other parkway kind of the walkable downtown area. Is it too late to do that at this point?
Well, you know, it's certainly something we can consider. The reason it hasn't been discussed much is because all of the pushback, like I was on the council for a term and I've been mayor for a year, and it's always been a top priority of council. It's always been a campaign issue. Everyone wants to improve the main street. There is data that shows that when you create a main street somewhere else, it's not nearly as profitable and as successful, at least studies that have been done in the country. So it hasn't gotten a lot of traction. I know the people who will be impacted would prefer that, but we have to look at the big picture and see what is best for everyone.
Okay. Hey, anything else you'd like to update us on at this point?
No, those are kind of the big issues going on in Heber. We were recently named number 4 in the most dynamic city by the Walton Family Foundation. And so there's a lot of potential economically for our city with all this growth coming. It just seems like now's the time that we really need public input and we need to come together as a community and make these decisions for what will be best for us in the next decades to come.
Okay. So again, that's kicking off then 6 to 8 p.m. there at the Heber Valley Elementary School. But people will have an opportunity to tell you what they think.
Yes. And thanks so much for the opportunity to share, get the word out.
You bet. That's Heber City Mayor Colleen Potter. KPCW News Time now, 8:39. Joining me now in the studio from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, Tom Webb. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Some more awards handed out here. And Michaela Schifrin, again, just she doesn't have a big enough trophy. closet.
Well, I mean, we talk about this every week now. I mean, it is exceptional. I had a conversation with our staff last week about living in times like these, which is very special. But yeah, Michaela, her season has come to an end. The World Cup finals are finished in Andorra. She finishes the season with 17 World Cup victories, which I did some quick math last night, is 21% more wins in a single season than had ever been done before. Just 21%. You know, not a huge sum, but amazing. So, yeah, so she finished with 17 victories, 4 Crystal Globes, finishes the 2018-19 season with 60 wins in total, which means she's 26 off tying Stenmark's record, 27 to beat that. I mean, on this current rate, she will do that ahead of the 22 Beijing Olympic Games. Knock on wood, fingers crossed, etc., etc. But, yeah, I mean, just an amazing season. So she finished up with... not just slalom, but she's got the giant slalom. She's got every accolade under the sun coming at her. She's heading back to the US this week and is going to be all over TV. We've got a couple of really exciting opportunities lined up for Michaela to tell her story to national and international media. So hopefully she will continue to get the recognition that these amazing feats deserve outside of the ski racing world.
Yeah, so is she a teammate, though? I mean, because it's she's got her own coaches, she's got her own waxers, she's got kind of her own program going on. I mean, does she intermingle with the rest of the team?
She does, yeah. She does have some special attention because somebody of that stature obviously deserves that kind of focus. But yeah, she is a very strong team player. There's a lot of people in that team who she motivates and inspires. And it's not just about the people that she's competing with on the US team at the moment. She's also, frankly, one of the most friendly people on the entire World Cup circuit. And you just have to look at the way that her victories are celebrated by her rivals to see how popular she is. I think anybody who keeps an eye on Michaela's social media will have seen over the last year that she's really starting to show a little bit more about what Michaela Schifrin is like away from the slopes. She's goofy. She's funny, she's cool, she's warm, she's engaging, and that's why she is one of those most popular figures on the World Cup circuit. So yeah, she's a good teammate.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, is she sharing her winning ways? I mean, right? I mean, she knows something that others just maybe haven't figured out yet.
Well, I wish it was that tangible. I think when you take a sport like this, and frankly when you take any kind of phenom, whether it's in ski racing or in golf or in basketball or anything like that, what is it that sets apart that kind of 0.01%? If we could put our fingers on it, then we could theoretically, you could train other people how to replicate that. But I think that it's just possibly one of those things. Maybe it's talent. It's that tiny little bit of extra talent that gives her the edge. I won't go into huge amounts of detail about it, but having worked in Formula One motor racing in the past where people drive similar cars, what sets apart a champion in that sport? Well, you know, it's 0.0001% of extra talent, which when you're dealing with that elite level is all the difference you need. So, yeah, she is a good teammate. She does try and pass on her knowledge, but if she could say, just do this and you'll be as quick as me, then life would be a lot easier for the coaches.
Okay. What about the rest of the recap then with the World Cup finals?
Yeah, so while Michaela was smashing every record going, Ted Ligety had a top 10 finish to end out his season. So local boy finished 8th in the final giant slalom of the season. Bryce Bennett finished 7th overall in the downhill. So he's had a really strong season. And we talked a little bit over the last couple of weeks about the development program, about kind of who's coming through. Well, River Rademus posted some interesting comments on his Instagram page this week about kind of what he's learnt over the season. But he finishes up as junior world champion and with a bright future as well. So now that the season for Alpine is coming to a close on the international stage, we're now looking ahead to our NASTAR Nationals. We've got our own national events taking place here in the US. So we're going to get some of those folks back from Europe to come and inspire the next generation of skiers here in America.
Yeah, so do like the Ted Ligetys and Michaela Schifrin show up to the Nationals, or do they leave it to maybe some of the younger kids?
Sometimes, yeah. It just depends on schedules. You know, I mean, these guys have done 4 or 5 months of on the road, nonstop. So I think just giving them a little breather, just a chance to go and say hello to friends, family, you know, that sort of thing's important. But yeah, for example, at the NASTAR Nationals, Loren Ross and Ryan Cochran-Siegel are going to be out there pace setting for the folks who take part in that. And that means that we set a pretty high standard for people who are taking part in NASTAR, which, for those of you who are not sure, is the biggest recreational amateur skiing series in the world. So it's good to be able to have those kind of World Cup elite level athletes setting the standard for folks who want to take part in that.
Yeah. And so is it up to the athlete? I mean, they're basically, they have their sponsors, certainly, but they're also somewhat employees of U.S. Ski and Snowboard. I mean, do they get to choose how much time off and when they have to get back to training?
Yeah, I wouldn't say employees. I think that certainly suggests a slightly different status that they have within the team. But yeah, I mean, look, we have to be extremely respectful of the time that they have away from competition and training. We make sure that we give them as much notice as possible if we want them to turn up at something like that, or to come and speak to some of our very generous and amazingly supportive donors or our sponsors. So it's just part of the kind of overall planning. But we do get some extremely good support from them, not just at this point as finals have ended, but looking ahead to June, we stage a very big event at the Centre of Excellence with all of our partners, and we have a load of trustees who come in, and we have a lot of athletes turning out for that. I think last summer, I think we had something like 45 of the elite athletes come out for an evening at the COE, which was quite something, including people like Ted.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Anything on freestyle there?
Yeah, freestyle, the international season's ended, but they've just been finishing up their own nationals up in Waterville in New Hampshire. So Jalen Kauf, who finished the season in second place overall, and Jesse Andringa, who, if you don't know Jesse, he and his brother Casey are two of the cooler people in our team. Really good young men, actually so dedicated to their sport that some time ago they moved into a cabin in the woods so that they could afford to keep training and competing. They're also very, very funny young men. But Jesse and Jalen respectively won their individuals moguls nationals titles, and then on the Sunday they won the dual moguls title, so finishing the season on a high for them. In cross country, we do have one more World Cup event of the season. The cross country crowd will move across the Atlantic to come over to Quebec City, Canada, for their final World Cup. But Jessie Diggins got herself on the podium in the final European event of the season. That was in Falun, Sweden. She put herself in third place in the 10K there. So a good strong end to the season for her. She's going to be meeting up with her ex-teammate Keegan Randall after the Quebec City event for some really exciting media that we've got lined up. We're looking ahead already to a year out from the 2020 Minneapolis Cross Country World Cup event that we managed to secure with the International Ski Federation on the back of those historic gold medals that Jesse and Keegan won out in Pyeongchang. So we're going to be taking them to New York after Quebec City to go and spread the word about looking ahead to that event, which will be here before we know it. So that's good. And then in snowboard, again, their season has come to an end. Actually up in Quebec City as well. And Julia Marino there, she took victory under the lights at the final World Cup big air of the season, Saturday night, so ending her season on a high. So at the probably around this time next week, we're going to be issuing some data about how good our season has been overall. We're working on that at the moment, but I think when we tally up all of the World Cup podiums, the X Games medals, the Du Tour medals, everything else that our athletes have been achieving over this season, I think we're going to look back on this year as a pretty strong winter. So we'll see.
Okay. Let's see. When do you name the team members for the upcoming season?
Yeah, good question. So we actually do that in a kind of two-stage process. So firstly, they're nominated to the team, and that's something that we do. The coaches and everybody else gets together when the season's come to an end over the spring months. So they put together who the nominations are, and then we announce those to the athletes. And then the actual teams themselves are not named until much closer to the season starting. So we have the kind of two-stage process. We nominate an athlete, we tell them that they've been nominated to the team. For some of those athletes, that means a decision time. For the younger ones, obviously, it might be a chance to make the step up to A or B team. For maybe some of the older athletes who've got thoughts on post-athletic careers as well, that nomination can be a nudge for them to start thinking, do I want to put myself through another season of this? So it's not just a question of naming them. We give them that nomination. They have some time to think about what that means for them, their families and their friends. And then when we name the team closer to the season, it means we know we've got people on the team who are fit and raring to go ahead of the new season starting.
Okay. Would you nominate then Lindsey Vonn, who's announced her retirement?
No. Now Lindsey's announced that retirement, we're not going to nominate her. It would be great if we could nominate Bodie Miller as well, and Julia Mancuso and Peekaboo Street and all these superheroes from the past. But no, Lindsey's now very firmly focused on the next stage of her career. We do have a chance to celebrate that with Lindsey coming up. US Ski and Snowboard launched a fan club earlier this season. We've done a couple of exclusive online Q&As so far with Chloe Kim and with Michaela Schifrin. Chloe's was actually emceed by another teammate, a young man called Toby Miller, who is a snowboard halfpipe athlete. And Toby and Chloe are actually dating, so we managed to get a little insight into what their life was like. With Michaela, we did that with her last week, and we've got one coming up on the 30th of March with Lindsey from her home in Vail. She is on the 29th. She's running a Lindsey Vonn Foundation fundraising event, which is now, I think, in its third year, and is very popular, helping her raise some funds for her foundation. And then, yeah, if you're interested in maybe asking Lindsey Vonn that one question that you've always been desperate to find out the answer to, have a look on our website for under the fan club section, and you'll be able to sign up there to take part in that Q&A next Saturday.
Okay, so we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Okay, Tom Webb from US Ski and Snowboard, thanks. In the studio now with an update from Basin Rec, I have District Director Brian Hatton. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see, you've got the Trailside Playground project. What's happening here?
Yeah, we are actually replacing our upper playground. It's been over about, it's 20 years old or so, and we've, our teams have worked hard keeping it put together, but we've finally made the choice to just take it out and put a brand new one in. We're pretty excited. Some new features and hopefully adding some new life to the park up there.
Okay, can you tell us what you've got planned? I mean, in terms of the new features?
Yeah, there's a big netting feature that I think will add some excitement for those older age groups, but also the youngers can use it. I'm a big swing fan, so we're keeping the swings in play and wanting that to be part of the playground, as well as your kind of a standard playground type feature where you have the slides and the climbers and those types of things where they can stay busy. And probably the biggest thing is shade. Our parks and rec team, they secured a grant through the RAP grant process, and we're putting about $100,000 worth of shade up there with hopes to keep everybody safe from the sun and creating a better experience for those users.
Yeah, so you're using structures or trees?
Hopefully a mix of both. We are going to have some structures up there similar to what we have at Matt Canute Park, but also we're hoping to put some trees in there to have more of that natural feel that we don't have a whole lot of up here.
Okay. Let's see. You're also working on an open space forest management mitigation. What's this about?
We had the Summit Park open space forest management plan was revised by the Department of Natural Resources, and just looking at the Summit Park open space that we have, and there's definitely some areas of needed improvement for forest health, and we didn't have the funds to secure everything that needed to be done. So our open space coordinator is in the process of, she put in an application for the Watershed Restoration Initiative grant, and with hopes of helping us do this process over a five-year period, doing it, I think it's about 60 acres at a time. So it's a big, big ordeal. And I mean, we shot for the moon and asked for $700,000 a year. So hoping that we get a portion of that and helping to thin the forest. And it's not just for fire prevention. It's also, I mean, forest health is a big part of it. And keeping, I mean, the beetles are a big problem in those areas, and you'll, I think, going to see some impact from the beetles this summer. Invasive species up there as far as plants and things that shouldn't be up there that have been brought by either the animals in the area from as they go from one place to another, and helping to mitigate that. Hoping to protect the homes around that area from fire if it does happen. Not that it can avoid it, but hopefully it'll help. If there is a fire up there, it can help mitigate some of the impacts that fire would have.
Okay. Let's see. Speaking of open space, how much off the top of your head do we have left in that open space fund?
Depending, there's some projects that are pending right now. Without those going through right now, we're about $13 million, but there is one project out there that would take a big chunk of that. So it would be about a $10 million purchase. So that would go down pretty quickly if it goes through. We've been working closely with Summit County and trying to get that the agreements figured out. So hopefully we'll have that nailed down in the next few months anyways.
Okay. That'll be a big announcement.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's substantial.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely would help preserve a corridor that would be nice, so it doesn't get overdeveloped, and help hopefully creating some recreational passageways and transportation means to get from neighborhoods to neighborhoods, so you don't have to get in your car. So that's our hope.
Okay, let's see. You've got a what you're calling it Try It Out fitness program. Try It Out, spelled T-R-I. I'm guessing this has to do with a triathlon.
It does. Yeah, for those that are interested in giving it a try, that's kind of what it's geared towards, those beginners or maybe some that haven't done it in a while. It's a training program. It'll be Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 8:30 to 9:30, starting on April 1st, and it runs until June 1st. And they'll try the different aspects of a triathlon, and giving them the opportunity now that we have the indoor track, we have the pool, we have the bikes. So we have all of those things within our facility, and then with hopes that maybe those people will want to try some other ones too.
Why so many recreation classes in the morning? I mean, it just seems, you know, somebody who has to work in the morning, it's just like the pickings are so slim in the afternoon. Is it just because you don't get the turnout for them?
Yeah, I mean, we do have some popular ones in the afternoon, but I can definitely talk to the fitness coordinator if you're looking for some specifics. But
and it's not just Basin Rec. I mean, yeah. it's the Mark, it's Silver Mountain,
I mean, we do have some offerings, and I think it is usually in the afternoons that this community likes to be outdoors more. I know winter makes it a little bit more challenging, but I feel that they like to get outside when they get home from work when they can. But we do offer different classes of different varieties at different times, but sometimes if we get two or three to a specific class, we have to justify having enough people in there to pay the instructor and all that thing. So we'll try different classes, and mornings usually are the popular one.
All right. And then also summer camp, that's got registration starting April 1st as well?
Yes. Yep. Our summer camps sell out quickly. We have a number of different types of camps. We have our Summer Blast, which is our day camp. We have adventure camps that go to water parks, and they'll go climbing. They do a bunch of different things. That's a travel camp, sports camps, mountain biking camps. And the price ranges from about $100 to $250, depending on what camp you're looking at. So there are lots of options out there. And you can look at a lot of what we're offering. You can't register right now, but at least you can put them in your queue as far as what camps your kids might be interested in participating in.
So people tend to register just 1 week here and another week there, as opposed to just every week? Or
some do a mix. Some will register all week or for the whole summer, for the 10 or 11 weeks, whatever it is. But other ones, depending on travel and how our summers are, they can just do a week at a time or even a day at a time. We offer day drop-ins to different camps as well. So we try to keep the variety open, and hopefully that, I mean, if the parents needed an outlet for their kids, or if you're at work and your kids need somewhere to go, we'd love to have them.
Okay, basinrec.org?
Yep, basinrecreation.org.
Oh, okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Probably just be on the lookout. We are working with Park City Municipal on our community survey. We hope to have it out at the end of this month. We're looking for input from everybody. So we're looking for input on how you like to recreate, where open space, trails, ice rinks. I mean, we're trying to figure it all out, and hopefully as we plan for the future, this will all play into that, and we'll put out there what you want.
Is this going to be done online, or are you going to send out surveys to people?
This will be online. We're using a new company this year that everything will be done online. So there will be some notifications sent out, but also we'll get the word out when it's up and live, so everybody will have the chance to put their voice in.
Okay. Brian, thanks.
Thank you.